I'm Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is November 15th, 2014. The website is theskepticarena.com. I sent the following science story to a bunch of evolution deniers. And in the Word document associated with this podcast, I provide a link to a science story detailing the discovery of a missing link. I managed to sucker in one well-known creationist. Here is email number one. Chemistry professor Ed Nealon replied, "Sure, and we thought the coelacanth was in the same situation from its fossils." But it wasn't, was it, Ed? In fact, the coelacanth is doing quite well. Science always moves forward. Religion never moves forward. So it has always been, so it shall always be. Ed wrote, "Lobed fins for walking, that is, until we found them alive, a 1938 evolutionary surprise." Ed, evolution is always surprising us, just like the story I sent you, although I'm sure that wasn't the kind of surprise you were hoping for. What you are hoping and praying for is the glorious day when they find the fossil of a man buried in the same layer with a dinosaur. Well, you've waited 2,000 years for the return of Jesus, but I think you're going to have to wait a whole lot longer than that before they dig up Fred Flintstone. He wrote, "And they never hit the ocean floor walking at all." Ed, as your buddy Ken Ham likes to say, how do you know? Were you there? He wrote, "So much for fossil deductions." Ed, so you think you just single-handedly destroyed centuries of scientific conclusions by thousands of scientists? Impressive. Your ego, I mean. Unfortunately for you, 99.9% of your fellow biologists think you are full of crap. Maybe you should get out of the miseducation business and get into something that would make you much happier, like a pulpit. Ed wrote, "If you ever found a fossilized fruit bat, you'd assume that the teeth meant it was a flesh eater." No, I wouldn't. I would also consider the possibility that its teeth could be used for opening tough fruits. Oh, that's right. That's exactly what they are used for, aren't they? He wrote, "Faulty reasoning all around." Ed, I wouldn't go so far as to describe anything that you've written yet as reasoning. By the way, I took the liberty of responding to your answer to the question, "Why does a good God allow evil?" It is in the attachment above. And I will read that essay in a few minutes. He continues, "But we reality deniers tend to look reality in the face rather than make up stories." Ed, if that claim were true, you wouldn't be talking to invisible ghosts. If that claim were true, you wouldn't be dedicating your life to lying to students in a desperate attempt to keep your ancient death cult relevant in an ever-advancing world. If that claim were true, oh, screw it. That claim couldn't be farther from the truth. You live in a little fairy world of demons, devils, ghosts, unicorns, fire-breathing dragons, and all kinds of other assorted nonsense, all because ancient desert shepherds claimed that an invisible ghost told them it was true, and you believe them. You people seriously need to grow up. Ed continues, "P.S., do you really believe that we have documented 250 million missing links?" Ed, every fossil is a missing link, so yeah. Every fossil is a link to what came before it and what came after it. Every fossil is missing until it is found. Missing link, like microevolution, is a term made up by creationists. Both terms are red herrings. You can only fool other ghost worshippers with that nonsense. Ed wrote, "Tell you what, Ed, I'm on pins and needles. What? He said, let's divide that by a million and see if you can come up with 250 of them. Ed, you don't have to divide it by anything. Just start visiting museums and universities around the world and then do the math for yourself. Ed wrote, each clearly showing how it is a missing link. Better yet, Ed, why don't you just ask the other 99.9% of experts in your own field of biology and have them explain it to you? But you already have, haven't you? I'm not telling you anything you haven't heard before. But as long as you are being terrorized by an evil, invisible monster who threatens to torture you forever if you lose your faith, you wouldn't dare risk it, would you? Pascal's wager owns your soul. Well, mind, actually. And likely always will. There is nothing we can do for people like you, Ed. Our only hope is to free future humans from the horror of your vile religion and the fear of your murderous, torturing, evil ghost. He wrote, seems to me that people in the know never use the fossil record as evidence to support evolution. Ed, it is but one of many different foundations upon which evolutionary theory is based. As a professor of biology, you already know this. Ed asks, why? I'm all ears, Ed. Now Ed explains why. The vast majority of fossils magically appear fully formed with no hint of ancestors. Hey, Ed, that reminds me of something. What is it? What is gnawing at me? I wonder what that could be. Oh, yeah. That sentence doesn't describe evolutionary theory. It describes yours. An invisible ghost with severe anger management issues created humans fully formed out of magic mud with no hint of ancestors. That makes so much more sense and is so much more logical than all that science baloney. And those researchers with their evidence and microscopes and book learning and stuff. Hey, Ed, tell us again about the fire-breathing dragons who lived in the oceans. You know, the ones mentioned in Job chapter 41. I would love to see a fossil of a creature who could breathe fire and survive. I wonder why we haven't found them. Scientists have found insects so small they could live on an ant's butt 50 million years ago. But try as they may, they can't find any evidence of your gigantic sea creature who went extinct less than 6,000 years ago. Imagine that. Ed wrote, sorry to break the news, Neo. Well, that's okay, Ed. The good part is, now that you've convinced me how stupid science is, and shown me that a magic ghost is the only logical explanation, I'll get to live forever like you. And Ed concludes by writing, follow the white rabbit. Thanks, Ed. And you be sure to let me know if you hear any updates on the hunt for those fire-breathing dragons. Oh, yeah, and the unicorns. And now we'll read Ed's essay on Why Does a Good God Allow Evil? With my comments. He begins, an atheist bemoans the existence of evil. Ed, who doesn't? Actually, I can answer my own question. Christians don't. In fact, they not only don't bemoan the existence of evil, they worship it. If you can name one creature from any literature on earth, from any time in history, who is a more evil monster than the god you worship, please provide the name of that creature and explain how it is more evil than a god who confessed to murdering an entire planet of humans and animals and threatens to torture billions more humans for all eternity. We are all anxiously awaiting the name, Ed. and I don't think Frankenstein will even come close. He wrote, and states this is incompatible with a good God. Ed, that isn't the atheist's position. It is Mr. Webster's. Good and evil are antonyms, Ed. So the only one here who holds a contradictory position would be you. And I provided him a link to the definition of good, which lists the antonyms. He wrote, this is a common complaint. Ed, probably because it has never been answered. He said, however, the alternative explanation to this good God is an evolution-based origin myth. Ed, you might find this link useful. And I gave him a link to False Dichotomy. For those of you playing along at home, the reason why Ed inserted his logical fallacy here is because this is the spot where he takes a question that he cannot answer and heads off in another direction in a desperate attempt to distract his audience from the fact that no one has ever been able to answer this question. Ed continues, which has no definition for good or evil. Ed, those can be found in any standard dictionary. He wrote, so it's interesting how the atheist has to borrow from our theistic biblical worldview of God's universal standards of right and wrong to complain about the evil which cannot be defined in atheism. Ed, atheism is nothing more than the rejection of religious mythology. It has nothing to do with evolution, nor with universal standards of right and wrong, nor does it attempt to define anything. Atheism is a bullshit rejector, nothing more. He wrote, strange state of affairs, no? Ed, but you don't find the Bible to be a strange state of affairs, do you? Of course you don't. The sun and the moon freezing in the sky for 24 hours, or the sun screeching to a sudden stop and then going into reverse. Perfectly reasonable, right, Ed? Of course they are. And I provided him links to those verses in the Bible. He wrote, furthermore, I believe that God grieves more over evil than our atheist friend. Well, Ed, then maybe God should have thought things out a little more carefully when he created evil, in Isaiah 45, verse 7. An atheist quoting scripture to a ghost worshiper. Does it get any more humiliating than that? I don't think so. Ed continues, but we chose to walk away from God and his full influence in the Garden of Eden. Ed, no we didn't. Your imaginary original mudman did. Christianity is the only morally bankrupt abomination in the world that actually condones the punishment of descendants for the crimes of their ancestors. No country on earth is crazy enough to promote such a disgusting moral law. He wrote, and into spiritual and physical world, which is antagonistic to God. Ed, how come your holy book is filled to the brim with characters who disobey God? It sounds like even all those people who knew God personally didn't believe in him. Almost everyone in the Bible disses God. Even his own son contradicted him. And I provided him a verse. Ed, your God reminds me a lot of Rodney Dangerfield. He didn't get any respect either. Ed continues, so we find ourselves removed from God's full power by our own actions. Ed, after what I've read about your God, that might actually be a good thing. He wrote, and then we have the chutzpah to question the only solution to the problem. Ed, I must have missed it. What was the solution? He wrote, the problem is this tendency we have to sin, and the solution is God in the flesh, Jesus Christ. Ed, question. I can understand how Islam can be considered monotheistic. What I'm wondering is, why does Christianity claim to be monotheistic? If Christians add one more God, they'll have enough guys to enter the Olympic 4x4 relay. Ed wrote, so yes, God is good. Ed, you have to say that, don't you? He's sitting right beside you right now, isn't he? He's listening to every word you say and knows every thought you think. There is nothing in this world that would make you risk your eternal soul. You are trapped by the fear of an invisible evil monster who has promised to send you to eternal torture if you lose your faith. There is nothing anyone can do to help you, Ed. Only you can save yourself from the horror that is Christianity. But the odds of that happening are less than Stephen Hawking's chance of winning the Mr. Universe contest. He wrote, "And we, by choice, live away from God in an evil world." Ed, go back to Isaiah. For those of you who believe in the Bible, that verse makes it very clear why you live in an evil world. He wrote, "Deep down inside, we all know we are not good." Ed, speak for yourself. In a recent television interview, my wife rated me as dynamite squared. And Ed concludes his essay by writing, "So when an atheist complains about the evil in the world being inconsistent with a good God, it is an exercise of contradiction on the atheist's part." Ed, already asked and answered. You have made it clear in this classic display of avoiding the issue that deceit is your only option. And as long as that invisible monster has control of your amygdala, the rest of your life will be ruled by that fear. Ed, a worm has a better life than you do. And here is the second email from Ed Nealon. He begins, "Poor Neo, so many mistakes and venom in your reply." Ed, the venom you think you detect is simply your reaction to someone who dared to disagree with you. You are obviously one of those professors who doesn't tolerate dissent very well. Ed wrote, "Where shall I start? I am a PhD chemistry professor, not biology." Ed, I stand corrected. He wrote, "Science always moves forward." I guess that's why my research colleagues have an expression, "One step forward, two steps back." All research scientists know that one. Ed, if that were true, we would be going in the other direction, wouldn't we? But we aren't. Maybe that's the problem, Ed. Your research colleagues have it completely backwards. They, like you, think science is moving backwards. One step forward, two steps back. Ed, you have brought new meaning to the phrase, being wrong. Ed wrote, "As for the coelacanth not walking on the ocean floor, yes, we were there, filming them. Don't you feel shame for spouting such nonsense?" Ed, since you brought it up, people all over the planet are walking around with cell phone cameras these days, and yet not one single recording of your invisible friends. What are the odds? That is one thing that all the thousands of gods throughout Earth's history have in common, Ed. They are all terrified of humans. Millions of ghost worshippers pray and desperately beg for proof, but the most any god will agree to is a brief appearance in a bowl of Rice Krispies. Ed continues, "Yes, I could destroy centuries of scientific conclusions by thousands of scientists with just one ugly fact. Ever heard of Huxley? Perhaps read How the Scientific Method Works and you may understand your error. It's a big one. Quote, the great tragedy of science, the slaying of a beautiful hypothesis by an ugly fact." End quote. By Thomas Huxley. Ed, personally, I thought my quote was better. But I do agree with Thomas Huxley, who was known as Darwin's bulldog, that the ugly facts of evolution completely destroy the fairy tales in your holy book and started humans on their way to a new understanding of reality as they slowly began to leave ghost worship behind and began embracing a brave new world, written by Aldous Huxley. Ed wrote, "Anyway, I'm through with this conversation." Ed, you were through after you attempted to try your bullshit on someone who knew that you were holding an empty gun. That is why you are now standing there, oozing from dozens of holes. Those holes would be all the points I brought up in my email and my Word document, for which you had no reply. He wrote, "There are excellent answers to your spiteful hatred." Ed, if spiteful hatred is your description of people who disagree with you, I would hate to be enrolled in one of your classes, especially if I were one of those unfortunate students who believe the 99.9% of biologists who accept evolution as fact. You've made it clear that those students had better keep their mouths shut. Ed wrote, "But it would be a waste of time trying to educate you." Ed, the religious term is brainwash. It would be a waste of time trying to brainwash me. But you got that one right, Ed. It would be a waste of time. And here's why. From 1 Corinthians 13:11, quote, "When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things." End quote. Ed, you need to follow the advice in your Bible more closely. Ed writes, "I can only teach willing students." Ed, that's why religion focuses nearly all its attention on our youth. You must get to them before they develop the ability to defend themselves. You literally put the fear of God into them, and that keeps them enslaved and contributing until they die. You being a prime example, Ed. Now, Ed writes, "Your grade, F." Ed, the fact that you grade rational people who follow the scientific consensus an F because they don't agree with your bizarre religious interpretations has to make those at your university wonder if your students can possibly get a fair shake from a professor such as you. Based on the evidence you just provided, Ed, it appears that the answer is no. Giving out failing grades is your weapon. As a professor, it is the only way you have of getting back at those whom you cannot dominate. If an emailer whom you don't even know gets an F, how are we supposed to believe that a student under your influence can dare to voice opinions or make rebuttals without suffering your indignant Christian retribution in the form of a grade reduction? Ed, you just demonstrated to everyone how you fight back against those with whom you disagree. Why would your students be any different? Ed wrote, "Goodbye, Neo." Ed, another thing before you go. Atheists only make up about 4% of the U.S. population, yet over 40% of Americans accept evolution. So who are all these people? They can't be Hindus, Jews, or Muslims, because they barely outnumber atheists. The answer is, they are Christians. That is the fact that you are dishonestly hiding from your audience, Ed. 90% of evolution believers are Christians who don't challenge provable, settled science. You fall into that bizarre little fringe group of Old Testament Christians who are an embarrassment to modern progressive Christians and rational people alike. And he concludes his email by writing, "I pray that your mind is opened and your heart to see the evidence for what it actually supports." Ed, 99.9% of all the world's biologists have already concluded that the evidence overwhelmingly supports evolution, not a magic ghost. Until you can convince your colleagues that you are more than just a religious nutbag pushing your beliefs onto your students and anyone else who will listen, you will continue to reside on the fringes of science, a thorn in the rose garden, so to speak. But damn, you will be really popular at church picnics and Bible studies. And now for the final email from Ed Nealon, who wrote, "At least one of my colleagues doesn't appreciate spam. Please respect his, and probably many others, wishes to be excluded from our conversation. This will be my last email to you." I did not reply. It was obvious that Nealon had had enough. I'll bet that was one email he wished he had never replied to. And now we move to the science segment. Today's story, Hungry Bats Compete for Prey by Jamming Each Other's Sonar. In their nightly forays, bats hunting for insects compete with as many as 1 million other hungry bats. A study shows that Mexican free-tailed bats jam the sonar of competitors to gain an advantage in aerial foraging contests. Bats use echolocation, or biological sonar, to find and track insect prey in complete darkness. When a bat hears a competitor going in for the kill, it makes a specialized jamming call to prevent its competitor from making the catch. The bats often take turns jamming each other until one of them gives up. This is the first study to show that bats actively jam the echolocation of other bats, and it increases the number of known functions of bat sounds to 3: echolocation, communication, and acoustic interference. To demonstrate jamming, biologists had to rule out other possible functions of the call. For example, that the bats were simply communicating with each other. The biologists recorded natural bat competitions with highly sensitive cameras and a specialized array of ultrasonic microphones that allowed them to reconstruct the flight paths of the bats from their emitted sounds. The researchers saw that the bats almost always missed their prey when another bat was jamming them. Sonar interference has only been observed in Mexican free-tailed bats. It isn't known if other bat species or other echolocating animals like dolphins are employing acoustic interference. And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today we have an anonymous quote. "Blind faith is an ironic gift to return to the creator of human intelligence."
Are you ready, Goose? Start walking!